and I will fight you in a red Klingon jiu-jitsu suit and then stab you in the heart. Captain's Pod, Stardate 83-17-23.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me today, he looks so realistic, it's Commodore Dicer!
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I added a few pixels. Been trying to remove some pixels, but...
I was going to say, isn't the goal to usually remove some pixels from specific areas?
Well, it depends on who you are and where those areas are, but...
That's true.
Yeah, I appreciate the resolution is coming through.
Well, a slightly emptier bridge today. We don't have Ambassador Danae. She's been granted shore leave from shore leave. So this is meant to be shore leave from sinning. She's been granted shore leave from doing this.
If it helps, I can kill a fish and put it in my freezer. Like, if that will help things...
We may lose listeners.
If it will help people feel at home.
Do you think you can add to the Ambassador's chaos? Can you feel her chaotic boots?
No, unfortunately, I am not the chaos machine, the amazing chaos machine that she can be. Mm-hmm. I can do twice the trolling of you if you like, you know, like
just don't find Yoda in my bridge seat or something.
It's close. Like, oh, look, it was
there's
close.
There's a pattern in the carpet.
It was close.
It was closer than I wanted it to be.
Yes, like, exactly.
So when I paused the episode. So this is in the outtakes from last week.
Oh, okay. All right.
Is it in the outtakes?
I don't know.
No, it's in the show proper. I've literally paused editing to record this episode. So who knows
what you're going to get time? To listen to last week? What is existence? We don't know.
Last week, the Commodore saw a pixelated hexagonal Yoda in the impulse engines of the Enterprise. And I actually paused on... the right image.
Oh, did you?
And I couldn't
okay, and you
see,
didn't
it.
See it. Okay. Yeah.
And I didn't see it. It was only when you brought up that specific frame. And it doesn't look like Yoda. By this point, you will have all seen this on Twitter last week.
Listen, I never said it looks exactly like Yoda. I'm just saying if your brain is willing to play some tricks on you, you go, wait a second. Is that Yoda in there? I think that might be Yoda in there.
No, I saw the Virgin Mary in there more than I saw Yoda.
Well, that's your thing.
So I'm famous for seeing the Virgin Mary everywhere. In my tea. Uh-huh. Amazing. I do want to ask, a week out from last week's episode, I'm still my mind is just still thinking about it and still spinning on how fun that episode was.
Buzzing.
How do you feel about it a week on?
I'm buzzing, mate.
Buzzing, mate, innit?
Yeah, innit. It was really good. I lament that it was so good because it was so unique. So it's not like something... Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, you could do another crossover, and I would love the snot out of it, but I think part of what made it so much fun for me was how unique it was. So it's not like... Yeah. Necessarily repeatable, but what is repeatable is the energy that says, let's be creative, let's do fun stuff, let's, you know, stop trying to be CSI or Law and Order, and let's be Strange New Worlds and
or Lower Decks. Let's be another show,
as the case may be. So I had a good time with that. Very much.
That's
so
awesome. Yeah, I can't stop thinking about it. My parents listened to the show. At the live recording as we were doing it, and I was like, why did you do that? You haven't seen the episode yet. They haven't watched any Strange New Worlds or Lower Decks. They watched one episode of Lower Decks with me and were like, this is way too fast. What's going on? I don't understand what's happening here. But they were like, we were so excited, they want to now watch that episode. And I was like, well, you got to get through some other stuff first. But yeah, it was so much fun. I hope it's not the last time we see something as ambitious as that in the show, for sure.
Do you ever get annoyed at how normal people watch stuff?
Yes. Yeah, really, like, this doesn't matter to you? You mean you didn't...
What do you mean you just jumped in halfway in the season? What are you? What planet are you from?
What do you mean you just went in and watched Creed 3? You didn't watch every Rocky movie leading up to it as well? Amazing. Well, this week, we're going to be covering Season 2, Episode 8, which... By the time this episode comes out, who knows? This episode's probably been out for months by this point. But it is Under the Cloak of War. Now, Yep. As soon as I read the title, I was like, the Commodore's not going to be fully on board with this one. Let's have
maybe
a big prediction and a very specific prediction based on that title.
The big prediction is that we're doing a war episode.
Okay. Good. Maybe I should be more specific.
There will be a battle.
War episode battle. Making notes.
Yes. 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 What are the warring species in Star Trek? Like, Klingons are a warring species, right?
Just Klingon. I mean, Ferengi? What we've learned is that the Federation will go to war with everybody. The Ferengi... The Ferengi would be the war profiteers. They'll be the arms dealers. Very rarely go into battle.
Okay.
Romulans. They're just very prideful, so they're going to war for their territory. The Borg, I mean, hardcore gonography is likely. That's like the war, quote unquote, that we've been looking at a lot. The Zenkethi would be nice, but that's, I think, probably too much of a reach.
My specific prediction is there will be a character in this episode who's a ginger.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody on the crew. The gingers are underrepresented on this crew.
I'm telling you. That's,
in Star Trek in general. We have Tilly, and I think that might be it. Who else am I missing? Is Tilly the only ginger character in Star Trek?
Well, there is some scientific basis for this.
That they get bred out by the 24th century?
Well, naturally, red is very...
Careful,
no,
Aaron.
This is a scientific study. Uh-huh. Because of the way the genome works with the red hair...
Lack of soul, yep.
You said that, not me. And you're allowed to, because you are a ginger, so you're allowed to.
Yes, I am not. I am not.
But no, there is something about how the percentage of red hair continues to drop and may be extinct by a certain year. So,
That is a conscious decision that has been yet to be noted by anybody writing Star Trek, I would be
that would be amazing,
amazed,
wouldn't it?
Amazed. Because Gene Roddenberry explained why there were no bras in space. He just said there's no bras in space. You don't need them in the future. So I imagine he would have had an answer for this, the lack of gingers.
Wait, so nobody wears a bra in any of the shows?
Yeah, so I can't remember who asked this. It was somebody in the TOS days. It may have been... I can't remember. It may have been like a guest star or somebody. But they were like, this outfit is really uncomfortable. Can we incorporate a bra? And he basically said, don't be silly. There's no bras in space. Like, just in his head, we've evolved beyond the point for needing bras for whatever reason that might be, whether it's practical... aesthetically, comfort, whatever it is, there's no bras in the future. Disproven by Into Darkness with a certain Carol Marcus.
That's true. That's true.
Always baffled me. Oh, the most annoying thing about that scene, by the way. Anyway, gingers and bras aside, let's head to 10 forward.
Or gingers out of bras aside.
Aside from gingers out of bras, let's head over to the holodeck, watch the episode. We'll meet you all in 10 forward for a full debrief. 2 to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings about the episode we were just traumatized by. Most important question first, what is your beverage of choice, or whatever you like, actually?
Something that doesn't look like internal organs. actually, that jambalaya looked great. I'll have some of that jambalaya.
I'll have some of the Delton parsley, because I love things that you just put an alien planet's name in front of but still call it parsley.
That's right. Yes.
That's an amazing Star Trek trick. All right, Dicer, let's give us a synopsis.
Oh, I get to do the synopsis.
I gotta surprise somebody this week.
Okay, the synopsis is, hey, look, there's a Klingon guy coming. Turns out he's connected to a couple of our people who are in the war together. Remember how they took drugs and became amazing fighters? Well, that's because they were introduced during a war with the Klingons in a place called Jagar, and that is what happens next is that the guy comes on board and they're like, war stuff. I think I'm a terrible person now and nobody should ever root for me because I'm a murderer. The end. Okay. Is that close enough?
I love that you got Danae's tone as well.
I tried.
Not quite the same level of chaos and jumping around. Like it was, I understood what was happening. So it wasn't an ambassador synopsis. Uh-huh. Yeah, a war criminal comes on board as a diplomat, and we explore the history of Mbenga and Chapel. Overall thoughts and feelings.
I thought it was a really bold choice to do two Lower Decks crossover episodes in a row, and I loved it. I was so glad to see the Lower Decks crew again, and. Yeah. Oh, wait, am I living in my fantasy delusion where the show is interesting and exciting? Yeah.
Oh, it was interesting.
Oh, was it now? Was it interesting? I don't know. I did not enjoy this episode. Let's just say that and we can get into the details if you want to. But I just, you know, man, I did not see anything new here.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. It's a bit of a bummer. I love Star Trek going for the heavier stuff. I do. Sure. However, Star Trek does it best when you don't realize it's doing it. Like, it kind of slips it in there. So I'm going to make a big comparison to The Wounded, which is an episode of TNG where our favorite engineer, O'Brien, who's kind of like he's a recurring character, but he's not in it anywhere near as much as, like, obviously Data, Beverly, etc. Mm-hmm. And his old captain has gone rogue, and he kind of gets brought to the forefront because they served together during a war with the Cardassians. And now O'Brien, who has all of this built-up rage against the Cardassians, has to help the Federation and the Cardassians hunt down his old captain.
Was he able to keep up? Because I've heard they're hard to keep up with. The Cardassians.
He was. Okay, he kept up with the Cardassians very well.
Okay, good.
And the episode does a great job, because this is a war that was like years ago, and nobody on the Enterprise really served in it. So it's O'Brien battling with his demons, but we're still surrounded by our crew and stuff. The comparison here is that this episode is just all their narrative and all in there and all in the pain and in the flashbacks. Like in that episode of TNG, we don't get any flashbacks. O'Brien explaining what that war made him. And the best line, he says, "I don't hate you, Cardassians. I hate what I became because of you." And I just think that episode, like, if you want this theme, go and watch The Wounded, because that just shows this arc for me so much better, whereas this mm-hmm. feels like it's living in the trauma and living in the look how shitty war is and look what it does to mm-hmm. people. It's missing that element of hope and mm-hmm. kind of what Star Trek does for me.
Yeah, it's a hope show, right? Isn't Star Trek supposed to be a hope show?
I know, and is it not supposed to be?
It's supposed to be optimism, hope, in looking at the best in people. And listen, let me make a couple things clear. Number one, the trauma of war is real, and anything mm-hmm. we say today during this episode is not meant to make light of that, to say that's not important, to say that's not something we need to wrestle with, to deal with. We're talking about an entertainment series that we've enjoyed that is trying to do something a little bit darker, a little bit deeper. We understand that. But I want to say from the beginning, just because I didn't like how this episode handled it, that doesn't necessarily translate to the real world ideas.
Exactly.
Of,
yeah.
You know, coming back from, you know, killing people and having to exist in a world where your government sent you to kill people and you killed them, and now you have to deal with the ramifications of that. Like, that's,
yeah,
you know,
suddenly that government is telling you to work with the person that you were sent to kill. Right. Like, all of that stuff is real and it is worth exploring. But yeah, I agree. We're just saying we don't like how we did it.
The second foundation I want to lay is that I think this episode did try to say something good about the idea of privilege, that optimism can come from a place of privilege. I am aware of that in my own life. A lot of my optimistic tendencies, my movement towards forgiveness, pacifism, hope, all of those things come from a place of privilege. That privilege being, I don't exist in a world where I have to murder to stay alive, or murder to save a friend, or murder to, you know, whatever. Or kill, I should say kill. I know that it's the semantic distinction between murder and, and kill is important. And so I understand that when the show says those things, that there is something interesting it's doing. However, I think when we come to pieces of entertainment, we come to them for different reasons. And that is, again, the subjectivity, the relationship each of us has to our entertainment, to our content. I don't come to this show to feel darkness or traumatized or sad about the state of war. I come to Star Trek in general, and this show specifically, to think about what it could be. What's the optimistic view of what the world might look like? What does it look like when we do start to drop prejudices and understand the hope that comes with redemption and forgiveness, and that the ideas of nobody is beyond forgiveness are valuable ideas to at least think about, if not embrace. And this episode was interested in saying the opposite.
Yes,
that's not
crucial.
Why I came here, and therefore I didn't get the show that I thought I was being presented, and I did not have. I don't have much good to say about the episode.
Yeah, I'm tempted to just do a general discussion here rather than break it into good and then silly sins and just have a general... Because it is a heavy topic, and I don't think Star Trek should shy away from it. But I agree with you completely that it, for me, this episode didn't focus on the interesting thing, which is how do you move on, how do you forgive, and how do you work with this diplomat who actually quite interesting... interestingly has become a diplomat under false pretenses and a false narrative.
Correct.
Instead, it spent three quarters of its runtime convincing me how traumatizing war is and convincing me how much trauma specifically Mbenga and Chapel have gone through. I didn't need convincing of that. It felt like it wallowed and sat in that space of the battle and the patience and the war crimes and all of that that they sat in the flashback. And I'm like, why are we here? After the fourth time we've gone back to it, what more do I need to learn from this moment? And that's not what I didn't come to Star Trek for this war epic. I'll watch Deep Space Nine, which quote-unquote snuck it in with the Dominion War and whatnot. We had plenty of it there. But I'll go and watch like a war drama or something.
Correct.
I want that philosophical debate. Like, give me more time with the war criminal diplomat dude. Right. Like, have more conversations with him, make something more interesting in the present to talk about. And I think that's the big miss. Like, people generally see overwhelmingly positive reactions to this episode online, and I get it. It's dealing with something big, it's taking a big swing, it's not apologizing for dealing with war and how you move on from that, but I think it could have done it better if it just focuses on the philosophy rather than the war aspect.
I have a distrust of the general conversation around Strange New Worlds right now. And that probably just comes from disagreeing with a lot of it. And that's a natural thing. I'm not saying people are wrong. I'm just saying I look at some of the love of these episodes and I'm thinking, man, I think people are just really happy to have a Star Trek show that's getting attention.
I'm right there. I agree, because we've had such a drought of Star Trek for so long. And I've always made this comparison when a friend at uni, that when I was like 21, said, what is the difference between Star Wars and Star Trek fans? And my very reductive 21-year-old brain was, because this was the time that the Star Wars sequels were coming out. My very immature brain said Star Wars fans are very critical of kind of everything that comes out, but they still watch it. Star Trek fans are happy for anything. We're just kind of like, oh, we're getting some more? That's great.
Yeah.
Because somehow Star Trek always seems to be on the fringe, despite having so much content. It's still this fringe thing compared to Star Wars.
It really is. It's been very interesting to see such a successful property and such a beloved property maintain its fringe status. That's a very interesting thing about Star Trek. Now, you could say the J.J. Abrams movies broke through in a different way, maybe
than
other things did. And I think Strange New Worlds is kind of breaking through in some interesting ways. And I think that's exciting, and I get it, and I'm glad for the happiness. But what I see in this second season is an absolute mess of programming. I don't understand how anybody put this season together like this. This follows the crossover episode. Like, it's wild to me some of the places this show is going. And maybe for some people that's good. Ian, I have to ask you some questions.
Okay, that's a great place to start.
Because I don't understand what I just saw, and I'm trying to rest. I went back and rewatched it, and I still don't understand. This show is saying Mbenga's a murderer, right? Like, he murdered this guy.
It's meant to be ambiguous, but it's not doing a good job of being ambiguous. So okay, the setup,
the text on, like, this is what I thought. I thought maybe down the line. I mean, there's what, two episodes left, and I hear one's a musical.
Yeah, 9 and 10. Next week is a musical.
So we've got a musical.
You couldn't have the musical back to back with the Lower Decks crossover. That would be too silly. Which makes me wonder, how depressing is episode 10 if they have to break it up?
What is the finale? So I don't think, I mean, maybe the finale will deal with this. And maybe
the finale will be gone.
You know what? You know what the finale is? Write it down. The finale ends with Mbenga getting taken away so we can have another court episode at the beginning of season 3 to solve what happened with this murder. I went back and watched it. It is purposely vague in some ways. The text of this episode, there is no indication that he had to kill this man. There is no indication that this man was threatening him in any way. Not in this episode. We may get a flashback that shows us what happens behind the screens and the guy pulls a knife or a gun or something. Maybe, I don't know. Still don't know that would change my mind on what happened here, because he clearly goes to that box to get that knife. He is clearly dealing with trauma in a way where
stabs him in the heart.
He stabs him in the heart. It is confusing also because Chapel comes around the corner, and I think we're supposed to think she sees the figures behind the fogged
glass.
But then
she's on the other side of the screen.
But then she's on the other side of the glass immediately.
That was weird framing.
It cuts directly to her being in the room. And I wonder if something else was supposed to happen there, and then it just got notes or edits or something.
Yeah, it either wasn't directed very effectively or was butchered in editing somehow.
Butchered? Because I get it.
I didn't, but yeah, I am the butcher of this episode. The setup is he has the dagger ready.
Right.
And he's at least contemplating, I'm just going to have to kill you, because he keeps saying, why did you have to come here? Why couldn't you have just left me alone? Almost as if, now that you're in front of me, and you keep pressing in, I have no choice but to kill you. And then we cut to this struggle that is instigated by Ra. He puts his hand on Mbenga's shoulder, but it is so unclear how that conversation suddenly gets violent and physical, other than Mbenga turns around with a knife.
It's weird. It's weird because the likely thing is they're going to make it an accident somehow. Somehow it's going to be, oops, your heart slipped into my knife. Like, that somehow, that's the only way I see them doing it long term. The problem is, completely neuters this episode then. It's this weird thing where they put themselves in that strange situation where we have a character who has either now murdered someone because of war trauma, or later on we'll find it was an oopsie, and he just wanted to show him that he was like, look, see, I was the butcher. I just wanted to show you. Let me show you in your aorta.
Yes. I hear that's how Klingons smell things.
Let me show your right chamber.
Yeah. And I wonder if if it is this, the show doesn't do a good job of telegraphing it. Is it that Ra wants to kill Mbenga now that he knows Mbenga knows the secret? And does he see Mbenga as a threat to his status within the Federation?
He might, but that's not in the text of this episode.
Doesn't tell us that, because maybe then he reached for the knife, but we don't. And there is a fine line between letting us make our own judgment, assessment, conclusion, whatever, and not signposting us to where the show wants us to be. And I think it signposted us pretty heavily towards Mbenga did it.
especially considering the end. The very last moment of this episode is his log saying some things break in a way that can't be repaired.
Yeah.
You know, and he's clearly, the metaphor is that he is broken in a way that can't be repaired. And then the machine that he just fixed has another error light pop up, you know.
Yeah.
I was surprised it didn't say Gorn error, as obvious as it was.
Well, suddenly flash up in like Klingon text.
Yeah, yeah. So the indication from that is M'Banga is a broken machine and is malfunctioning. That is the metaphorical text we're being given by how this episode ends. So
I mean, it is hard to do the Hippocratic thing, isn't it? It's really hard to see him as a do no harm. And maybe that's an interesting element of like the war doctor stuff. But for me, where I really got lost with it was when Pike comes to sick bay and says, look, you tell me about this. And it's a very Picard maneuver thing to do.
Yeah.
Is to come out and just say, between me and you, we'll fight this together. I'm on your side. Tell me what's going on here. And he's done that with Worf, and like with a silent nod, understood what's going on. The fact that M'Banga says, I didn't start the fight, but I'm not sorry it started, made me think, wow, maybe Ra did start the fight. Because that's a very loaded line. That's an admission of, I'm glad he gave me the opportunity to kill him. That's what really sent my head into a spin, because I was like, so what actually happened in that scene? But it's either deliberately misdirecting us, or the episode's trying too hard.
It is deliberately misdirected. There's no doubt
it's
deliberately misdirected. Yeah. There's no doubt that they, you know, will want their Klingon cake and eat it too.
And like eat it
they,
too.
You know, they want both things to be available to them. But I just, for this whole episode to just be about, you know, leading us to this place is so, it's just so not what I want from this show. Like, again, it again brings in, oh, all right, here's M'Banga's overarching, you know, story that now we're going to have to deal with in so many more episodes. And it's,
or
like,
maybe we don't.
How many?
Maybe we don't.
We're 8 episodes in. How many Strange New Worlds have we visited, Ian? How many Strange New Worlds have we visited? Like,
we visited a strange new ship. Like the Kelsey May was strange. That was
it sounds like that ship's from Alabama. That's a Kelsey May.
The Kelsey May. I'm with you, and it's so tricky because it's almost like they're worried we wouldn't get it if they didn't dedicate this episode to the flashbacks and specifically M'Banga and Chapel, and having a good chunk of setup in the back end of the first episode. Like, now the second half of the first episode is basically part of this episode. So why do we need that if you're also going to do a full episode flashback here as well? Like, it was too much. It's almost like they were worried we wouldn't believe this emotion unless they dedicated this much time to it. And I was like, no, I'll believe you if you write it. It's like with O'Brien, we didn't know a lot about the Cardassian War and his part to play in it. They just allowed him to tell us on screen and we believe it, because those are the words and that's how TV works. We're not there for every single moment. We can't be there for every single moment in these people's history. So you've got to do it with words and monologues. So it's just, maybe it's trying to be a more broad appeal. Like, we'll appeal to more people if we spell this out and show them exactly what we're talking about.
Here is one of the things about the flashbacks for me is, again, one of the things I come to for Star Trek in general, in this show for specifically, is this idea of cool explorations of both sci-fi and the moral ramifications of human growth. And ethical evolution, right? Like, I come to it for those things. The first part of that, cool sci-fi stuff, like, show me how the future might work and how it might be interesting. All those flashbacks could have been in Saving Private Ryan. Like, there was other than injured people being teleported to the doctors.
Transported. It's fine.
Instead of being on carts. Transported?
Transport, not teleport.
No, that's fine. Transportation transporters are a form of teleportation, right? Like,
they are, but it's the 10-year-old in me, whenever another sci-fi show would say, oh, the ship's got teleporters. No, it doesn't. It has transporters.
Okay,
Doctor Who would do this.
Yes, fair enough. Fair enough. So, aside from the matter transfer of
devices, I'll accept
the whole thing. It's really just it's war triage. That's all we're seeing. There's nothing like interesting or new. I mean, I guess maybe like, oh, we didn't get our organ replicator shipment in, so you know. But show me something. Show me something cool. Show me how war is different in. You know, the future in
it's tense. It's intense. That's war in the future is intense
in both terms, in both meanings of the word.
I mean, the transporter thing is interesting, like a way of protect. We can't do much with this person now, so we'll stick him in the transporter buffer, and it kind of puts a pause button on their condition.
Thing
that's interesting.
Was interesting, yes, but it also asks so many more questions than it answers, which
is, of course,
just put them all in there and triage is not a thing anymore, right? Like,
yeah.
No, you just you can do triage on a spreadsheet and then go, okay, bring this one out.
You can. Oh my goodness, you could. You literally could
just transport them all into the buffer.
It auto populates
and it auto populates, and you're just like, okay, we're ready for this one specifically now. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. But no, you're right. And there are these kind of, I don't want to say cheap, but I am gonna say cheap. The guy who they save goes back to war, comes back dead, shock horror. It did feel cheap. It did feel really paint by numbers in terms of this Private Ryan war drama thing that we've seen before. And it's not to belittle the situation. It's just, man, you laying it on thick in this episode. That didn't convince me any more of what they've been through. I get it. War sucks. I don't get it. I haven't been there, but I get it in this context. War sucks. It's just such an interesting thing to spend all of your time proving to me.
And in a real world way, again, just so we say it clearly several times, we are both privileged enough to have never understand what that means and how that would impact us. Like, that's, you know, nothing we have. It sounds like the episode you were talking about handles this same thing so much better, with a little bit of hope, with a little bit of optimism.
It does, because at the end of the episode, like, O'Brien, so this captain goes on like a rampage.
How is that episode not called Saving Private O'Brien? How is that how is that not
Yep.
Because other than that movie didn't exist yet, maybe? I don't know. But
1991 that The Wounded came out.
Okay, so that was,
yeah.
That was before Saving
it was
Private
before,
Ryan.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
man. Yeah. So Saving Private Ryan would have stolen from Saving Private O'Brien. That's amazing.
Yes, exactly.
But at the end of that episode, like, this captain is convinced that the Cardassians are looking to start up the war again, and that's why he's taking his ship and he's killing civilians that he thinks are doing... He blows up this civilian vessel that he thinks is carrying this advanced, like, weapon or scanner thing that's going to kick off the war again. And O'Brien sees him kill civilians, and he's like, I empathize with this man, but I cannot let him do this anymore. And he beams over, they have a heartfelt chat, they talk about it, and O'Brien's just like, what you're doing, regardless of what the Cardassians did to you, this isn't right. And the ambiguity at the end of that episode is Picard goes to the Cardassian captain and says, that ship was carrying this scanning device, wasn't it? And the Cardassian just like, well, I don't know what you mean. And Picard's just like, we scanned it and we know. So that captain was right, but they all agree that he still has to be stopped. And like, that's how you handle it. Go and watch The Wounded. Compare that episode to this and tell me this episode is doing a good job with this subject. And I will fight you in a red Klingon jujitsu suit and then stab you in the heart. Because you're wrong.
You sure you're ready for full contact? Ian,
full contact, sure. I am. But let me put my cane down for a second while I do some martial arts. Jeez.
By the way, to throw some love at some things, Robert Wisdom's great. I love...
Oh, yeah.
I
absolutely.
Love him in
incredible.
This. I love, most recently in Barry. He has a great role in Barry that I've really, really enjoyed. And, of course, was in The Wire as well. But, yeah, Robert Wisdom is great. It's always fun to see Clint Howard pop up in something.
I was gonna say, did you recognize him?
Oh,
that's
yes.
Great.
Oh, yes.
That's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, definitely.
So for those that don't know, he is a 7-year-old version of this gentleman, played one of the most iconic aliens in TOS. That big green alien that you think of if you've seen TOS and is in a lot of the closing credits turns out to be this 7-year-old alien adult person, and it's him as a 7-year-old, And his performance is so good. I thought he was an adult, but was a little person that was playing a child. Like, he's so good in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's in this one. It's this nice little TOS callback.
Yeah, I always love it when Clint Howard shows up, especially if it's not in one of his brother's movies. I'm always just like, he probably earned that part instead of that nepotism thing.
Nepotism. Yeah, no, I did like that. That's a nice bit of stunt casting. And yeah, the Klingon ambassador is the diplomat. He does a great job. Like, I want to spend more time with the war criminal. Like, the way he talked and the way he presented himself was way more interesting to me than the war stuff that I already knew. I do want to talk about, the nerd in me wants to talk about, the Kelsey May as well. It's a very pretty ship that I hope we get a model of sometime.
Okay.
Like, really interesting.
Does it annoy you so much that I don't even pay attention? Like, the ships just
doesn't
go, like,
annoy me. No, it doesn't annoy me at all. Like, I just know you're not a true fan.
I could not tell you a single thing about what the Kelsey May looks like. Like, that's just like, that's like an establishing shot. That's like asking me to say, like, what does the sign to the high school look like when they establish that they're going into the high school?
Oh, like, I couldn't unsee it. Like, it's got that really weird pointed
And I know I'm weird in that way. I know Star Trek fans love the ships. And Star Wars fans love their ships too. But, like, that's just never... I'm also not a car guy, so maybe that's part of it too, is like, I don't have that thing in me.
Yeah. For me, it's the DeLorean thing. It's the iconic... Ships are just fucking cool, okay? And cars are cool.
I'll take your word for it.
It's the one thing where I'm a bit of a meathead about it. I'm just like, cars are cool, I want a car. But yeah, this ship has, like, just got an interesting design with the single nacelle, like, kind of diamond saucer section, which I know is a contradiction. But yeah, really, really pretty ship. I like doing something new than just saucer section plus glowy sticks on the side. I like it when they mm-hmm. do something new. There was an interesting moment where linking back to the transporter buffer thing, and this is going to end up being a criticism again, because they store a person in the transporter buffer, which is interesting because it kind of informs how Mbenga developed that technique to save his daughter in season one. Call back, I didn't need. Call forward, I didn't need necessarily, but I get it. Fine, we like doing that stuff. We have, I think, 3.2 seconds to wrestle with the idea of deleting this person before an Mbenga-sized hand just goes, delete. There's nothing in that moment. And I wonder if that's, like, deliberate because you have to make a split decision. But also, for me, that's an interesting debate. Like, we have, it's literally the train trolley dilemma, isn't it? Like, 100 people will die if I do nothing. But mm-hmm. if I choose to kill this one person, I'll save 100 people. And it's the moral ambiguity of making that choice. Yes, he made the right choice. But we spend zero time in that moment. Did that feel weird to you? Or were you just like, okay, he died?
Yeah, it didn't. I mean, yeah, it was just... It was, again, all part of the triage of it all. Which is, again, something I'm privileged enough to not to have to deal with, the idea of who lives and who dies.
Mm.
So, yeah.
For me, it just felt like a possibly interesting thing to sit in, and a Star Trek dilemma that they created that just went zip, gone straight away. And maybe it's to indicate that Chapel is struggling with the decision because she's just got there and Mbenga has been there for so long. This isn't even for him, it's just a Tuesday afternoon. Like, for Chapel, it's the most important decision of her life. Yeah, I would have liked a bit more time in that moment, I think. What else did we have? I did have, like, kind of one kind of big sin, which was at the beginning when Ortegas is doing her rant to Uhura about doing the laundry list of crimes that Ra has committed.
Oh yeah, that he's standing behind me, isn't he, cliche?
And how interminably long Uhura lets that continue. Number one lets that continue instead of just Captain on the bridge, like... It goes on for so long. Yeah. It was so cringy. Cliche.
I agree. I had that as well.
Anything else you wanted to cover off about the episode?
I don't know that I've ever noticed. Again, this is coming from somebody who just admitted they don't even notice what the ships look like.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I've ever noticed that whatever replicator or creator thing they're using for that mm-hmm. beverage, that the ready noise...
synthesizer.
Yep. The synthesizer, the ready noise is just the kitchen timer, the egg timer bell. Like, just like this old, like, 20th century. Yes.
Well, there's a reason for that. That sound effect comes from TOS. Like, that's the sound effect that they've reused. Yeah.
Correct. I just think that's funny to hear it continue yes. on as just like, yeah, that's what, because all of my appliances now sing me a song when they're done.
Yes.
They're like,
yes.
And I'm just like, okay.
The washing machine does it. Yeah. It's like, it would be like hearing Alexa's voice, I guess, on like the ship's computer. It's like, oh, we're still using Alexa like, in the 2300s.
It's like, oh, that's amazing.
That's great. I did have like one kind of interesting, an interesting thing that the episode barely scratched the surface of, and that is that the Federation very quickly and happily uses a Klingon war criminal as a diplomat for peace. Now, there is, for me, that feels like the United Kingdom hiring Goebbels after World War II to be a peace envoy for the UN. Like, that it stretches me beyond belief. Like, we wouldn't have been having any Nazis, and that's what the Klingons are represented as in this. They are the bad guys, they're the Nazis. Using one of, I know we used them as scientists, that's apparently fine, but using them as diplomats for peace does feel like an allegory too far.
Yeah, no, I agree. I can't imagine a society doing that. The argument for it possibly in Star Trek, again, is that the Federation is forgiveness forward, optimism forward, like that it would be a purposeful choice to tell that story of even the worst of the worst. But it doesn't make sense on a human level at all, or on a emotional level at all, to put
like
somebody...
Like a war crimes tribunal is just not a thing. Do we just not do them?
Correct.
Because killing civilians is frowned upon. I know that much about war. You don't tend to do that.
Mm-hmm. I can talk a little bit about Mbenga and Chapel, and that I think we're supposed to feel something for their relationship even in the flashbacks, even though they barely know each other in the flashbacks. Like, she just meets him within a couple days, maybe the same day as far as I know.
Like, how long that is. Maybe it was longer than days.
But what I'm saying is the show does not do a good job of showing us why they are so tightly connected, right?
Yeah.
Now, you could say, listen, war connects people, war brings a bond. Yes, but it does so for specific reasons. It does so because you're cooped up in a foxhole together using gallows humor to keep each other in some sort of spirits, or, you know, there is an actual relationship that develops during war because nobody else can understand what you understand. That is probably what we're just supposed to believe happens here, but we don't really see it. We never see Mbenga and Chapel finding that spark of this is why they you know, the war brought them together so strongly. And I feel like this episode's missing that. I feel like if you wanted to do this thing, I feel like that's part of kind of what we wanted to see. But instead it just goes, here are the ingredients. See, it's a cake, instead of showing us, you know,
how
that happened.
So. Yeah, here's the ingredients in the oven. I assume things happen in between to get to the cake. But and maybe it happens after this moon, but the episode one refers pretty exclusively to the events that happen on this moon.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she doesn't even use the super soldier serum on this moon. So maybe that happens later in the war, but it does feel clumsily put together. You're the resident... Hey, I don't like Spock and Chapel. So how did the Spock and Chapel play into stuff this week? Which continues.
Of course it
continues.
Does. Of course it does, because this show can't help itself. I mean, it's not a surprise at this point. They are clearly making that a through line of the season. And that's what they want to do. So, you know, go for it. You make the show you want to make, and I'll enjoy the different show that you didn't make.
For me, it's frustrating how bad they are together. Like, this isn't a partnership. This is barely a friendship. And I get it, Spock is different. It's hard, but there's no bonding or chemistry between them for me. And maybe I'm asking too much to have chemistry with a Vulcan, but I've seen it happen.
Was it supposed to be funny that he was like, I got this, and then was like, hey, tell me about the art of war?
Sincere.
Right. It didn't read comedy
to
me
funny
at all, but unintentionally it kind of is funny.
A little bit. it's like, hey, weird. You know what I'm talking about? Peace, let's talk about war instead. But
yeah.
it got stuck in that middle area where I didn't crack a smile, and Chappell's reaction was almost like, oh, thank you. That is better.
Yeah. What? Yeah, I didn't know. I think it was supposed to be compassion. We were supposed to see compassion in Spock.
Felt strange to me.
Yeah, it felt weird to me as well.
Yeah. I am kind of baffled that they let Mbenga fight Ra. Like, you excused Mbenga from dinner and you're fine with them going hand to hand in jujitsu or whatever it is. It's a classic Star Trek thing of the men kind of sort out their problems in some kind of futuristic combat style thing. Kirk and Spock do it. Riker and his dad do it. Worf does it all the time. Cool, fine. But it's in this case, it seems like an odd way to work out your trauma.
That is there so that we get more of them combating, so that it doesn't make the murder feel completely out of nowhere later, even though...
Does it?
I mean, what did you need? Yeah. I did have a thought as I continue pondering that the weird editing of that scene. I wonder if in the original, this is complete conjecture. I have not read anything that says this at all. I haven't read anything about this episode at all. I wonder if originally Chappell was in the room and saw everything and was meant to have lied about what she saw to protect her friend.
Yeah.
And then they thought, let's protect Chappell a little bit more. Let's not make her party to murder. Let's shoot. Because that the thing that's out of place is that fogged glass thing. It's just a cut to
the
fogged glass.
Screen. Yeah.
Let's shoot. We don't even have to get the actors to do it. Let's just shoot a couple people behind fogged glass and make it look like she didn't see what happened. And I'm wondering if that was the product, and that's why the only cut they had was to her being in the room, because they had to add the fogged glass thing
later. But man,
later.
Lose that. Just have her come around the corner and then leave it super ambiguous. Like, then cut to
but
him
I think she needs
dead.
To hear, they need her to hear something from that conversation. She needs, there's a piece of information or proof that she has to have in her mind for later that they needed to make sure was planted there. So they couldn't just have her come around the corner to a dead person. They had to have her bear witness in some way. I'm just conjecturing.
Weird.
It's just very, very weird.
No, I get it. It feels like a really, really weird choice. I mean, while we're on that moment, if at any point we ever see a recording from sickbay, it's going to gain the show a million sins. Because I know La'an says the internal scanners, the internal movement detectors or whatever. Sickbay has movement detectors, fine. That confirms the order of the story, but that is the loosest proof you could ever conjecture or kind of put together.
The
no
lack
cameras.
Of a video record of what happens in sickbay is ridiculous. It's just
it really
nonsense.
Is.
It's absolute, complete nonsense that we all just have to suspend our disbelief about, because
it's a big one.
I have cameras in my common rooms. I am in, 2023. Yeah. Like, this is not hard to do now, let alone.
And there are so many reasons you would want this.
Especially
as well.
There.
You would want this surveillance.
Yes. Yeah.
At the very least, engineering, the bridge, sick bay. You have cameras there because you have so many sensitive things that happen. The fact that La'an addresses it means they know what they pulled.
They know
disbelief. Yeah. They know that
they
would
know.
Be thrown up. So observing the sin does not excuse you from it, my friend.
Speaking of which, for being Black Ops, these guys sure do talk loud.
hang a lantern on it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Amazing. Maybe this episode will age differently going forward, but I would.
Oh, clearly we're coming back to this. Clearly there will be an episode to talk about. If there is not an episode to talk about Mbenga's guilt or innocence of murder for the audience, I don't know what's going on. Like, I will not understand what this episode was trying to do. Clearly they have to come back to this. Otherwise. Unless Mbenga is a villain now, And I don't think that's the message that this episode is trying, you know, to say. But
I mean, it's either saying that or it's saying it's okay to kill somebody as long as they killed more people than you.
Correct.
Did.
I should say murderer, not villain. But yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah, for sure.
Like selective murder is okay without.
I mean, maybe that is just the pacifist in me coming through. Maybe it's hard for me to understand justified. Justifiable homicide, especially in an instance where you go to a box to get a knife against somebody who has shown zero threat to you the entire time they've been there.
Unless he was showing the knife to prove he was the butcher, but
I think that's what we're supposed to believe. That is what we're supposed to believe. Again, if it comes to be an accident, which I think it will, this is my prediction, is that it will be an accident somehow, then, yeah, I think we're supposed to believe that he was just like, see, you're lying because I have the knife because I was the butcher.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'll be interested to see the next episode where Klingons turn up and see how they handle it, because I'll be, I mean, rightfully, we'll be watching Chapel and Banger like a hawk.
Did they not know he was on board? They both acted shocked when he walked through that door. Like, they had no clue he was coming on board.
They absolutely knew. They just didn't know he was coming into sick bay at that moment.
Okay. I can give them that a little bit. But
the burn was unexpected, wasn't it? They got to sick bay quicker because he burned himself in 10 forward. Yeah. Okay. So we're not going to do a, was it in the trailer? Because the best of my knowledge, I couldn't see any, unless it's in like a flash frame. There's nothing super obvious. Some of like the war battling stuff was in here, but there wasn't a Klingon ambassador with the knife sticking out of his heart in this episode. There wasn't anything super telegraphed. Telegraphed? That was weird. Super telegraphed.
You've been in America too many times.
I genuinely have. It slips out. And it's writing as well, writing in an American accent.
I was like, what's wrong with telegraphed? I don't understand what's telegraphed. Wrong.
Anybody that knows I'm English will be Ian, you dick. Commodore, anything else before we wrap this war up?
Is the bosun's whistle, is that a wink? Is that like a wink to TOS, like how they would do that?
Think it's just kind of explaining something that didn't need to be explained.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
It happens on Picard's Enterprise as well. It happens on Kirk's Enterprise. You don't see it. I don't think we see it anywhere other than on the Enterprise, which now, thank you, Strange New Worlds, we have to keep consistent. God help any other ship that now does it, because you've now labeled it as a specifically Enterprise thing, tradition. Yeah. But they just make it futuristic. It's in like Star Trek VI as well. I'm pretty sure they blow the whistle when all of the Klingons come on in the Undiscovered Country and they all arrive. Which, by the way, you want to see this topic dealt with better? Watch the Undiscovered Country too.
Very similar. Predictions?
Let them die. Predictions?
Yeah, my general prediction was that there was a war of some sort. I think that turned out correctly. So
there will be war and there will be battle. Oddly specific, there will be a ginger person.
Uh-huh. Somebody said something about rolling out the red carpet. I assumed that meant that there was a redhead on board.
Yep. I'm not going to give you that, Aaron. As much as I applaud you for your stretching of the English language and similes and analogies. Yeah, no, you still lose. Next week, I think you will be relieved to hear that it is the musical episode.
The back and forth of this season has just been... I don't know. I don't understand how this season was programmed, but I'm looking forward to a musical episode. I will probably love it.
It's gotta be. You've got a lot of talented singers in this cast as well. Okay, with that, thank you everybody for listening. I'm Captain Ian, and I'm going to purge a transporter buffer.
And I am ready for full contact.
What a surprise. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Okay, we have a lovely little email from Anthony Lackey. Hello there, sir. It's just titled, I Think You're Great, and I like that.
Let's stop there.
That's a great title.
Thank you, Anthony.
Let's wrap it up. Okay, thanks, Anthony. Bye. He says, I love the podcast. I think it's pretty great. I've had a love of Star Trek for my entire life. My earliest memories of it are from the TNG era during Sin-Dication. Nice, Anthony.
Very nice. We approve.
Mm-hmm. You all have brought me many laughs and a great amount of critical exclamation on examination, not exclamation, although we do exclaim at the same time.
And transporter, teleporter, you know.
It's all of that stuff. He has a question, and I don't think you'll be able to answer this at all, Aaron.
No, thanks. Thanks for your confidence, Ian. I appreciate how you see me.
Do you have any favorite Star Trek video games that you've played? I'd be curious if you've played any of them and which one is your favorite. Have you played any Star Trek video games in your long storied history?
I think this counts. The Next Generation pinball machine is incredible.
Doesn't count, but yes, it's great.
It doesn't count. I don't know, with some of the stuff that's on the screen.
It's not a video game.
Those new pinball machines are video games. They are. They just have a big controller. The controller to activate them is very big. Anyways, it's a really fun pinball machine. Fun enough that I think it constantly ranks in the top 10 pinball machines ever kind of rankings. If you keep up on that, you know, every week I check the rankings.
Yeah.
Well,
you still want to buy one, don't you? You're still like
noodling
purchasing one.
So expensive, Ian. The good ones are so expensive. Most of them are limited runs, and so that makes, you know, it even harder to get a hold of them. I do want a good pinball machine, but man, they are expensive.
I have played many Star Trek games. My go-to growing up, and I played the snot out of this game from the age of, I'm going to say, 13 to 17, like in that four-year period. I played this game so much, and it was Star Trek Voyager Elite Force. Now, this game, I'm dying for them to reinvent something like this. It takes place on Voyager. But you're like part of this tactical team that is specifically sent in to do these really, really hard missions. What was great about it is that you could walk around a good chunk of the ship. So you'd go to like the transporter area, you'd go to like the engine to engineering, to the bridge, you talk to Tuvok. They had a lot of like voice actors on there. But the best part of it was that it had this Halo style multiplayer game where you would just play, and me and my brother would play this. We would play against the computer, and the computer would generate like a bunch of bad guys, and you could pick your team. So my Elite Force, it was like me, I'd have Neelix in there, Tuvok, 7 of 9, and then I'd bring in like maybe some cannon fodder, Neelix would be the cannon fodder, I'll be honest. But then you could choose who you played against as well. So I would fight some Borg, I'd fight some Klingons. And you would have like this huge selection of weapons, like phasers and Borg weapons, Romulan weapons. And it was just like what I wanted. Like it was pretty, it was all nothing philosophical, just shooting people. Like it's not what Star Trek is about at all. But for me, it was like a Call
Unless
of Duty Halo
episode.
Thing.
No,
Unless it's
kidding.
This episode. There's a Generations PC tie-in game that was excellent as well. You played through the movie, but it was like parallel missions that weren't in the movie. And again, you had phasers, tricorders, you had to solve some mysteries. You would go into like stellar cartography and do the thing that Picard and Data do, where they blow up different stars to work out where the course of the Nexus would go. And you would change where it would go, go to that planet, investigate it, and see if you could apprehend Soren before he does his shit.
Hey, you know what I need in my day-to-day life?
What?
A laptop.
Oh no. Do you really? Okay, what happened to the laptop?
Well, no. I mean, a dog knocked it off the table and shattered.
Deliberately.
Shattered the screen.
Made eye contact with you.
Yes, yes.
And just knocked it off the table.
I said dog, not cat.
That's so true.
In this pup's exuberance to want my attention, got tangled up in the cords a little bit, knocked it off the table. That laptop's been through a lot. It's a pretty sturdy laptop. It's one of the reasons I got it. But just in this case, it just hit the corner perfectly or whatever. And so
imperfectly.
So the LCD or whatever the screen,
LED?
whatever the screens are these
VHS?
Days.
Yeah.
Was cracked and unreadable. So I plugged it into my TV you know, to make sure it was still working, that the, you know, the computer was still working. So I used it through my television for a while. So I'm sitting Indian style in front of my, you know, big TV in the living room, doing work on my laptop with a little trackpad.
That's amazing.
And keyboard.
This is the future, guys. This is how people are going to be using laptops.
Just cut back to me in the year 2000 with my very first giant gateway destination 34-inch television, or no, 42-inch television that was also a computer, and watching videos on it and blowing people's minds. I mean, I remember that destination remote. It was kind of like, it was a trigger remote in the, there was like a mouse ball on it for the, your thumb. So like
you may as well be describing the first radio to me, Aaron.
You don't know how remote controls work?
No, I don't know what you're describing.
You don't know what a mouse ball is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, well, yeah, so I'm not picturing what you're saying. Like the mouse ball is on top.
Like, you know, you hold a remote.
Yeah.
And so,
but
like,
it has a mouse ball in it?
Yeah, on the top for your thumb, like at the very top. So actually, like some remotes have this now. Like the Apple remotes are like this. Apple remotes now do like the touchpad, like move it around with your thumb kind of thing.
Yeah, touchpad, I get, but not rollerball.
Okay, well, that's what mice were for computers for a long time, were rollerballs. Did you not know that?
No, I knew that.
Oh, okay.
Because at school, because they were really, really hard, and you could take the ball out and just lug it at someone's head.
Yes.
Now, I didn't, but I did receive the lugging.
It's kind of you to aim for the head,
yes,
because that was not where my classmates would aim for.
Oh no. You played a game of mouse balls?
Yes, exactly. I can probably just replace the screen. I can probably figure this out. And so I ordered a replacement screen, and replacing the screen was just going swimmingly. Everything was working perfect. Took off the bezel, came off exactly like I thought it would. Used a hairdryer to loosen the glue for the screen, so the screen came off nicely. I had some tools that I used to, you know, pull that out. Screen
I didn't
came
know
off.
You did any of this. I knew it was broken. I didn't know that you got this deep into trying to fix it.
Yeah, rather than have somebody else to do something that's actually pretty plug and play, I will do it myself. So, unplug the screen, put the new screen in, plug it in, and the computer won't start.
Dog runs in and knocks it off the table again.
I was watching a YouTube how-to, you know, which is what we do these days. And the YouTube how-to, according to my computer guy, who I don't know why I didn't just call him in the first place, said it missed a very specific important step, which is anytime you do screen work, you should take out the battery first. Just because there are some times in some cases where plugging something new into something like that will fry the motherboard.
Oh no.
Which is what I did. I took the broken screen and I turned it into a fried motherboard, which, if you know, in laptops, that just means new laptop.
And I assume you're going to be suing the YouTube how-to video. I think there's this misconception that manufacturers design things to not be taken apart so that you have to buy something new, but it's also in their interest to make it repairable in some ways.
Two different approaches, I think.
Yeah.
So
if you're Apple, it's just inbuilt obsolescence.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely Apple's strategy has been to not let people take apart their stuff. If you've ever seen the movie Steve Jobs, which if you haven't, you should. Sorkin's a genius. You should watch it, but it really lays heavy into how much Jobs hated the idea of other people opening up his boxes and putting extra stuff in there. And
so, like, interesting. Is it the idea that I've made this perfect product? How dare you try to mod it?
Yes, it's the chef that's like, you want it without the sauce? What are you doing? You know, like,
you're adding salt? Have you even tried it first? Just recently got back into Minecraft, and the Minecraft is such an incredible example of open source. I know it's been bought by Microsoft and commercialized, blah blah blah, whatever, but it is, let's turn like kind of binary and coding into a game and just see what the world does with it, and just the shit that you can come up with in that game and the different permutations and add electricity to it as well. It's just, it's mind It's mind-boggling how much you don't have to develop a game and just make it accessible and customizable and people will go crazy with it.
I've never liked those kind of games, but I
know... Not enough guide rails for you?
It's not so much about the guardrails as much as it is about... I guess guardrails maybe is an okay way to say it.
I more meant guide rails, like not like guiding you.
Yeah, like I want to know my objective and I want to do my objective, you know.
Objective is to live, Aaron, and have fun.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild ruined Zelda games for me. Like I was just like, I have to cook stuff? What are we even doing? I have to find ingredients and cook things? This is nonsense. Crafting? I'm crafting stuff? What is going on?
All I wanted was the chest that went doodly-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Thank you. Yes, I want to solve a puzzle in a room in a dungeon, and I want to find a chest that goes doodly-doo. What is the problem here?
I love Breath of the Wild, and I love that because I'm such a Zelda nerd, but I will say... I have not completed Breath of the Wild because I'm hungry. And the next bit of the game that I have to do takes me somewhere where I need a lot of resources. And I haven't got the mental wherewithal to build up my resources to survive this trip in the desert to get to the next thing. And I'm like, I'm sure I could smurf it. I could find a cheat or something. But I kind of also just want to do this next bit of the game without having to cook dinner.
Thank you! Yes!
Enough of that in my real life? I get it. I hear you, Aaron. I see you.
So I'm happily enjoying Pikmin because it is the kind of game I love. It's so funny. The newest Pikmin, I want to get this right. I think it's a Japanese art of organization. Organization, that's... There's a word for it. It's like door something. I want to get this right. Dormammu. Dora.
The Explorer?
Let's say Doragami.
Let's not.
Dandori. Dandori is this Japanese term that roughly translates to group formation or team formation. It's the idea of breaking up individual tasks so that they are best accomplished by individual groups or teams. And this is a key central component of my brain. Like when I heard this term and what it meant, I was like, there it is. Dandori.
That's what I do.
Those are my spreadsheets. Those are the way I like to do efficiency.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.